if you've got high EI, you pick up things other people don't see. But the challenge is, because we don't talk about emotions, you often don't realise that you're seeing things other people don't see. So the best thing that you can actually do is to talk about these things in the workplace.
That's Roz Cardinal, founder and managing director of the workplace consultancy firm Shaping Change and an emotional intelligence expert. My name is Anna McDonald, and I remember when I first had the idea of bringing the Ambitious Admin to other assistants, I really wanted to empower and support other assistants, but I could not wrap my brain around teaching how to be a good assistant. So much of our skill set is intangible. In this episode, Roz and I explore the foundation of those intangible skills, the concept of emotional intelligence, and how you can develop this soft skill in the workplace. Hello and welcome to the Ambitious Admin Podcast. I'm your host, Anna McDonald, CEO and founder of the Ambitious Admin. I help new corporate assistants hit the ground running by taking a proactive approach to their skill development and building the confidence to bring their whole, authentic, dynamic, powerful selves to work. The goal of this podcast is to give you the support and guidance that is so often missing for the role of administrative professional and provide a space where you can feel heard, understood, and appreciated. Now, let's get to the new episode. Are you a new assistant who wants to hit the ground running and get a firm handle of the what, why, and how of your role? Snag my free course on how to be a good assistant and shine in your first 90 days. This free course covers what questions to ask in your first 90 days, what routines to establish, how to get organized with Microsoft OneNote, the top hard skills to develop, and the top soft skills to develop, as well as things I wish I knew when I started as an assistant. And it includes bonus materials, including a customizable executive support summary, a recommended book list, and a morning mindset worksheet. Head on over to theambitiousadmin.com to enroll for free. Welcome, Roz. I'd like to take a moment to chat about your accolades. And I want to be clear that I am only touching on a very small percentage of your accomplishments because you are a rock star in this arena. You have been in the human resources and organization development field for over 20 years. You're an accredited practitioner in human instincts, a certified neuro coach and neuro leader, a certified member of the Australian Human Resources Institute, the creator of the Women's Leader Archetypes Model and Assessment for Women in Leadership Roles. You were awarded the Leadership Coach of the Year Australia by Corporate Livewire 3 years in a row. And in 2020, you were a finalist in the prestigious Telstra Business Women's Awards. And on top of all of this, you have so generously agreed to be a guest on my podcast. So thank you so much for joining.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I really appreciate that. And I'm feeling a tad embarrassed when I hear you read out all of my accomplishments like that.
Well, it's incredible. You should be very proud and not embarrassed whatsoever.
Thank you. So
to start us off, let's just level set for those who are listening who may not be familiar with emotional intelligence. What is emotional intelligence? And I'm sure that's probably a loaded question, but what's an easy to understand definition?
It's actually relatively simple, and it's, you know, a lot of people think it's quite complicated, but what it is it's simply the ability to reason with and about emotions. That's all it is. You know, it's a skill set which is about how do we reason with emotion and about emotion. And that's just basically the simple definition. Emotions are data, and they just provide us an additional data set in our world in order to help us make effective decisions.
And from my understanding, and absolutely correct me if I'm wrong or I'm saying it wrong, but it's understanding and reasoning with not only your emotions, but the emotions of the people around you, right? And sort of being able to read those and gauge them.
Absolutely. And look, there's four key, I guess, core skills associated with emotional intelligence. There's the ability to recognize emotions in yourself and in other people. There's being able to use emotions effectively, which is how we actually use our emotional state to navigate life effectively. And simple things like you know, if we're not in the mood to do something, choosing to do something else or choosing to change our mood. That's an example of using. There's understanding emotions, which is understanding how complex they are and how they change over time and how you can have multiple emotions about something all at the same time and they don't have to make sense necessarily. And then the final step is managing emotion, which is in yourself and others, which is having good management strategies for your own emotional state and also the ability to help other people manage their emotional state as well. So it's the four core skills, but essentially when you add those together, it really is that ability to reason and make decisions using emotions.
Right, right. And it sounds like when you break it down like that, you say those four steps or those four sort of key components to it in a way that makes it seem like it's possible to develop those, which I think is something that is maybe a misconception about emotional intelligence, that, you know, you either have it or you don't and you can't learn about it and it's just innate. But really, the way that you are talking about the four components, it sounds like those are areas that you're able to develop.
Absolutely. Emotional intelligence is, in comparison to some other skills, it's actually relatively easy to develop because humans have an innate ability to do it. We're born with emotional intelligence. It's one of the things that happens for babies is that we have to be able to connect with our caregivers at that very, very early age, because if children don't bond with their caregivers, you know, these days it's not a problem, but certainly you go back a couple of hundred years and if a baby couldn't bond with its caregivers, they might leave it out on the street. So there's, you know, there's quite a big sort of component of instinct in this, where we're born with emotional intelligence, that ability to read faces, to connect. That's what babies are doing. They're reading faces. And then when children hit, you know, puberty and you get all the teenage hormones flooding in, they tend to lose a lot of that ability. And then as adults, we can either gain it back or some people don't try or don't put any energy into it and they remain at a lower level of EI. But you can absolutely develop it. It's really a matter of two key things, which is pattern recognition and the second thing is strategies. And you can learn how to do those things relatively easily. I mean, I found when I run, say, a one-day EI program and we do facial recognition, people are significantly better at recognizing expressions on faces at the end of the day than when they walk into the room. And, you know, it can be that simple.
Wow. It's fascinating because I hadn't even thought of facial recognition. You know, I think there's probably so much that goes into it. Body language, you know, that saying reading the room, there's actually so much to that. There's more than just a person's tone or their words or whatever, that it really is our sort of human nature to just automatically read all of those things.
Hmm. Yeah. And it's all of those things that make it up. You're right. It's faces, it's bodies. You know, we even look at things like emotions in surroundings, and can talk a little bit about that if you like. But, you know, going back to the sort of how we read people, what we're really reading is micro expressions. We're reading, it's almost like we call it emotional leakage, which is when somebody might be seeming to have a very, you know, straight face and be looking very calm, but then something will happen that distracts them. Maybe somebody shuffles some papers or the door opens or something like that. Then you get those micro expressions that flit across somebody's face, which tell you what's really going on. And people who are really highly developed in emotional intelligence can actually read those micro expressions that a lot of people might miss. And what we find with people with quite high EI is often they can't articulate what's happened. They're like, I just get this gut feel. They can't actually tell you, I saw something. You know, I saw that person looking a little bit upset or a little bit shifty or whatever it was. They just have this gut feel that something's going on. And your gut feel is really the, you know, I guess a big component of emotional intelligence. That's where we feel it all, because EI is really about, you know, analyzing those feelings. And that gut feel that you get about something is generally correct.
Well, it's really interesting because when I first started the Ambitious Admin, I had this great idea, but I was like, how do I teach people how to be a good assistant? Because, I mean, yes, it's Excel and it's PowerPoint and all of those things, but you can Google how to do a lot of that. But it wasn't until I started really researching soft skills and how to develop those that I was like, wow, it's emotional intelligence. That's what it is. And that it actually is something that's taught and developed and really important to being a great assistant, and especially in reading their executive, because that relationship is, I liken it to sometimes a marriage, sometimes a parent-child relationship. I mean, there's really a close bond that forms, and having that ability to read them, to anticipate what they need, to understand, especially if something's not going well, that it's not necessarily personal. There's just so much that goes into it. And so back to what I was saying is I was like, I wouldn't even know how to teach those things, but it all really boils down to the concept of emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. So that kind of brings us to my next question is, do you find or why do we find emotional intelligence being so important in the workplace specifically?
Because workplaces are comprised of humans. You know, we put humans together in workplaces, and workplaces are actually quite unnatural environments for people. If we go back to, you know, where humans started in, you know, the cradle of civilization is Africa, and we've spent hundreds of thousands of years on the plains of Africa living and working in tribes and family groups. And then, you know, even if we look at the European, you know, culture as things sort of started to evolve, up until the Industrial Revolution, we used to live and work with our families, essentially. If your father was a blacksmith, you would start to learn the blacksmithing trade from the time you were old enough to pick up a bucket, and you would eventually take that over. If your parents were farmers, you would start working on the farm as soon as you could walk. And essentially we grew up, you know, most of human history and human civilization has been around these family groups where we do know people really well and we understand them really well and we're used to reading their body language and reading their emotional state. And then 250 years ago, we removed humans from that environment and we put us into workplaces where we're meeting strangers all the time. And we don't have that, you know, I've known you for 100 years and I kind of know exactly how you behave and what's going on for you. I'm meeting all these strange people. And, you know, from a human instincts perspective, meeting strange people is actually threatening because we don't know anything about you. We don't know if you're safe or not. You know, if you're not in my tribe, I've got this sense that you're not very safe. And so emotional intelligence really comes into its own here because it enables us to connect with people, to bond with people quickly, to develop a rapport with people. And you're right, and if you look at the assistant example, that ability to read the people that you work for or work with and know what's going on for them and get that sense of when things are going well and when it's not. So, you know, it's a critical skill for everybody in life, but, you know, it's really exacerbated in the modern world, particularly because a lot of communication these days is happening electronically over devices where we just can't see the person. And we all know that, you know, everyone's got stories of those horrendous email stuff-ups where somebody sent an email that was read entirely the wrong way and ruined a relationship or got someone sacked. We all know those. And it's because, you know, we're a face reading species. We're an emotionally intelligent species that is used to spending time together and reading each other and reading the room. And, you know, it's the fact that we're put in environments where that we have to work really hard at it. So it becomes even more important. You know, if we were spending time with our families and we lived and worked with our families like we used to, you know, back before the Industrial Revolution, it just came naturally to us because we spend all day, every day with these people. Whereas now we're meeting strangers all the time. We're working with people we may not be familiar with people whose personalities we clash with. And that's where AI really comes into its own.
Yes, and it's interesting that you bring up sort of this virtual world that we've been in because when the company that I work for started discussing going back into the office as the pandemic was sort of winding down and the vaccine was rolling out, there was a lot of talk, and I know this is really globally, there's a lot of talk of will businesses go back to the office or will they remain remote? Will they do some sort of hybrid model? And at the end of the day, the company that I work for said, we are an in-person business because a lot of what we do, I work in the financial industry, and a lot of what we do is client facing. Mm-hmm. And it's just extremely difficult to build a relationship, a meaningful relationship, trust a relationship where there's give and take and learning about one another without being in person. And I think so much of that comes from this, and it's how we gain trust with people. It's how we build a relationship, really, is being in person and seeing their facial expressions and their body language. And they actually talk specifically about body language in client meetings. And for example, a person doesn't know about emotional intelligence or doesn't want to develop their emotional intelligence, what is the sort of adverse effect of that? How have you seen it be detrimental in the workplace for people who have a low level of emotional intelligence or just don't care to develop it?
I actually worked with an executive team. It was a few years ago now where I had a really, I guess, a glaring example of this. We did emotional intelligence testing with that executive, and the CEO actually scored really low. He was just not seeing things that other people were seeing. And then I got a call from their HR manager. It was a couple of months later, and she was very, very upset. She said that he'd made an announcement that had caught the rest of the executive team completely by surprise. They were shocked, horrified, disappointed, a whole range of emotions. And she said that I've resigned and so have three other members of the executive. And she said, I'd really like it if you could come into the organisation, just spend some time with us and help us process what's going on, because, you know, the people who had resigned had decided they just couldn't work in that environment anymore. When I sat down with the CEO, he was completely oblivious. He just didn't understand it. He's like, I don't understand why they're resigning. Like, what's happening here? And the executive was saying things like, how did he not see by looking around the table when he made that announcement, the shock and the horror and the disappointment and all of these things that were going on in the room? And he just didn't see it. And because he didn't see it, he plowed ahead with his announcement. You know, somebody with a higher EI who's reading the room would have gone, whoa, I've just made a really big error here. Let's stop and regroup and maybe have a talk about what's going on in the room here. You know, call it out and say, obviously what I've just said is a surprise to people. There's something going on. I can see that there's an issue here. Let's stop and talk about it. But he didn't. He just pushed through. And look, he lost half of his executive team in one day. The ones who stayed were, you know, disappointed, shocked, et cetera, but they had reasons for not leaving. You know, a lot of it's about, you know, financial reasons. Some people can't quit their job like that. But it was, to me, just a really interesting reminder of the difference. For people with really low EI, he just didn't read any of it. He was completely oblivious. Look, he's a really lovely guy. He was really smart, you know, a great executive, except he was always misreading people because he just didn't have that ability to look at people and go, I can see something's going on. You know, I remember somebody telling me about him that there was somebody in the room who was in tears and he just didn't even notice until somebody pointed it out. They sort of said, did you realise that, you know, it was his assistant, do you realise that she's upset and she's crying? And he actually hadn't noticed, even though she was sitting at her desk with tears running down her face and, you know, heaving shoulders, he actually hadn't noticed it. That's how oblivious he was. And, of course, when that happens for you, your relationships suffer.
Yeah, and just as an assistant, I can imagine it almost comes off as either they don't care or they're cold or it's irrelevant or that, you know, I just can imagine being on the other side of that table and the way it comes off. But it truly might be, as you said, that it's just not even on their radar.
Yeah. Look, I liken it to, you know, using, say, a map application on your phone. And, you know, when you open it up and you just see it like a standard street map. And then there are people who can turn on the street view and you can actually, you know, have a look around and you can stand in it and you can see it in 3D and you can look at the buildings. And then you've got somebody else who's sitting on the side of the road and they're drawing a map in the sand with a stick. And that's kind of like the difference. You know, if you think about the richness of the information that you've got, if you're in that 3D Google Street View and you actually can, you know, put yourself there and do a 360 degree look around and you can move up the street and have another look around, you can actually look at all the houses and you can see cars and you can see that sort of thing. Then you've got somebody who's just looking at the map view, which doesn't show any information about the buildings, but shows where all the streets are. And then you've got somebody who's drawing in the sand with a stick. You know, that's the level of the difference of information that people are gathering from, you know, really high EI through to really low. And they're just not seeing the same things and you can't expect them to see the same things. So somebody in Google Street View standing there going, I see this amazing sandstone building. And the person sitting there with the stick and the sand is kind of going, I'm just drawing lines. I don't know what you're talking about. So
it's a great analogy and a great contrast. And it kind of leads me to ask the question, what are some examples of a person with high EIQ versus low? You know, so let's say, for example, we've talked about reading the room or making decisions, or what are some other things where a person in the workplace might be able to determine whether they or the people they work with have high versus low EIQ? And then if they think that that's an issue in their workplace, how can they take steps to resolve it or to approach that situation?
Yeah, it's quite a tricky one because EI, you know, you've got these different steps involved in it. It depends on what step's missing or what's actually going wrong here. I had somebody else who had, you know, quite low EI. And one of the things that she said to me when I went into coach her one day, and she said, "Oh my God, my best person just resigned." I'm like, "Oh, okay." And she said, "I had no idea. I didn't know it was coming. I didn't know this person was upset." And I said, "Oh, you had no idea at all?" And she said, "No. I mean, 6 months ago, he told me he was upset about something." And it's that sort of sense of not following that through and going, if I don't address this thing he's upset about, he's going to get more upset about it, and eventually he'll get to the point where he quits. So it's, you know, depending on the kind, on where they're kind of a bit deficient in the EI space, if there's a lot of difference between somebody who's got it and somebody who doesn't. And in terms of picking it up, one of the interesting things about it is it's because we don't talk about EI a lot and we don't sort of have, you know, clear conversations and clear measurements and things like that usually. What I find is that people with really high EI don't know they've got it. They think everybody else sees the same things they do. And people with really low EI generally tend to overestimate their ability. So it's almost like everybody kind of thinks they're in the middle, when in fact there's a big continuum. So when we actually measure EI, I find people with really high EI are actually really quite surprised. They're like, "Oh, I thought everybody did this." And people with lower EI are kind of like, "Oh, okay, I didn't realise that I was missing all of this information." So it's an interesting world to be in, but it really is this sort of thing. If you've got high EI, you pick up things other people don't see. But the challenge is, because we don't talk about emotions, you often don't realise that you're seeing things other people don't see. So the best thing that you can actually do is to talk about these things in the workplace and sort of, you know, something like, "Hey, I don't know, hey boss, I don't know if you noticed, but Katie seemed a bit upset today." And it might be that he just hasn't seen it. He or she hasn't seen it. And that's one of the challenges is, you know, how do we actually start to have those conversations in the workplace and make them normal? Because workplaces have been, you know, we've all been conditioned to leave our emotions at the door, not actually talk about emotions, not process them, not, you know, it's almost like you have a locker at the front door of your work where you check your emotions in the locker and you leave them there till you leave at the end of the day. And so a lot of us have been conditioned, particularly in the Western world, to just not talk about emotions at work. So it's an unusual conversation to be having. And that's the real key thing I'd really like to see happen, is people start to normalise these sorts of conversations and talk about what's going on. And, you know, it can be hugely valuable. Like, imagine you've been at a meeting and everybody's agreed to something and, you know, everyone's technically signed off. Looking around the room will be able to tell you whether people have genuinely bought into that or not. You know, I've been in a meeting. I remember being in a meeting once where I walked out of the boardroom behind two of the general managers, and one of them turned to the other and said, "Over my dead body, we're doing that in my division." And it was something he'd just literally just signed off. But a look around the room, you know, I was looking around the room and I was thinking to myself, not everybody's on board with this, even though they were saying yes to the CEO and nodding their heads, like, not everyone's on board. And that's where EI has a huge amount of value in the workplace, because then you know, even though everyone said, yes, you've got some work to do, you need to go and have some conversations with people after, you need to figure out what's going on, you need to find out what their objections are. Or even if you're really brave, you call it out in the meeting and go, "Even though we've just said yes to this, I can feel there are people in the room who aren't there yet, and I think we need to do some more work before we decide."
And I'm glad you brought that up, because it really drives home one of the reasons I think emotional intelligence is so important for assistants, because we have a very unique vantage point in the workplace. We have a direct line to an executive, sometimes the CEO, it could be any level of management, but we are also in the workplace with their direct reports and the other assistants and the other employees. And so we often know, we have the pulse of the workplace. We often know many things that are going on that our executive just doesn't have the bandwidth or, you know, time to have their finger on, you know? But that also counts in the boardroom or in a meeting room when, you know, an executive is so focused on the topic, whereas we can sit back, as to your point, and really look at the room.
That's the room. Mm.
And then go and then take that and take what we're seeing, or, you know, like you said, Mary is upset or whatever that might be, and bring it to our executive. So it's not only just having the wherewithal to notice it and to see it, but then it's also having the confidence and the relationship with our executive to then bring it to them and approach them in a way that isn't accusatory and isn't, you know, is still approaching them with confidence, but in a way that is letting them know that you're just trying to help them, help the workplace, help the team environment. So there's so much to it. And it's just one of the reasons why I feel emotional intelligence is so important to this role, because we do have that unique vantage point.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you can observe. You know, a lot of the time, assistants are observing. You know, you might be, say, taking minutes in a meeting, in an executive meeting, but you're able to observe as well. And because you're not involved in the conversation necessarily, you can sit back and actually be, you know, that observer of the feel of the room, which is, you know, what's actually going on here? Am I feeling like people are genuinely excited and happy about this decision? Or am I feeling that there are people who are still holding back? And when you can read rooms and read people really effectively, you'll be able to get that sense. Like I said, it's a gut feel. People often can't tell you what they saw. It's like they can't say, I saw Bob do this thing or I saw his face do that. It's just simply, I've got this gut feel that he's not happy about it. And it's like, go with the gut feel, because our gut feel, that intuition, emotional intelligence is actually a really critical skill. And you know, people are innately good at it. So when you get a gut feel about it, you're usually right.
And what should folks do if they feel that emotional intelligence is lacking in their workplace, or that they'd like to have some training on it? Even if they don't feel that it's lacking, maybe it's just having a safe space to open up the conversation about emotions. To your point, we're kind of in this sort of cold corporate work environment. And I think also so often we're taught, don't take it personal. And I mean, to an extent, of course, if we took everything personal in the workplace, we'd be pretty sad a lot of the time. But, but sometimes, of course, it hurts to the core. So if a person is feeling like the conversation around emotions, the conversation around emotional intelligence should be brought to their workplace, where could they go? What's something they could do to bring that conversation to work?
A lot of organizations are now starting to recognize how important it is. You know, there's a lot of data out there now that show that soft skills are far more important than the traditional hard skills in the workplace. So EI training is a lot more common. I mean, I do quite a bit of it. I've actually got a free course online for, you know, developing your emotional intelligence, and I can give you the details for that later on. But, you know, it's about, you know, there's sort of plenty of stuff out there. I generally find where we start in organisations is generally because some sort of leadership program has been put in place, and then I always build EI into a leadership program because it's so absolutely critical. And then I find once leaders have done it, they quite often get really interested and then want their direct reports to do it, and so on, and so it flows out through the business. I do get people who come along to public programs as well, people who are interested for themselves, but there's you know, there's a lot of really good information out there. But one of the key things to remember is that it's a matter of practice. It's relatively easy. Once you've learnt the basic steps, it's just a matter of practicing them, and you improve quite dramatically. You know, I remember when I did my very first EI test, so I did it as a crash test dummy for one of my peers who was getting accredited in it. So when you get accredited, you have to have a, you know, somebody who's quite happy for you to, you know, debrief them and not really know what you're talking about yet. So I did it as a crash test dummy for a colleague of mine who was getting accredited. And at that stage, you know, I got my result back and I was like, oh, this is interesting. It's, you know, really cool stuff. And then a year later, I went and did my own accreditation and did my own test again. And even though I hadn't actively done anything about it, I hadn't been working on it, I hadn't sat down to make an action plan or anything, my EI had gone up by 10 points in that year, just because I was now aware of it and I understood how it all worked. So it's one of those things that, you know, once you kind of grasp it, like I say, it's relatively easy to learn. It's one of those things that once you get it, you kind of go, oh, it's actually important to look at people's faces and see what's going on. You pick it up really quickly because you start to get used to looking at people. Whereas, you know, so what I find with people who don't do it well is often when we look at recognizing, they just aren't looking. They're either not looking or they're not paying attention, or they're just, you know, they don't see it as a valuable skill. Where as soon as they do, like I've got clients who when they're practicing, when they're in a meeting, every time a new agenda point gets ticked off, they just do a quick scan of the room to go, how are people feeling about the last agenda point we just covered? And that's the way they practice, is, you know, they just make a habit of actually, you know, checking in at various points during a meeting and going, we've just made a decision, let me have a look around the room and see how people feel. And, yeah, once you start to play with it, it's a matter of just practicing it. You know, so there's recognizing, which is that, how do I get the data? And there's using emotions, which is, how do emotions guide how we think? And that's actually a really interesting one to consider, because everybody's done it where you sit down and you go, I'm so not in the mood for this, whatever this is. And we've got choices. You know, we can not do it, you know, we can put it off for another time. Or, which, you know, if you can't put things off for another time, which is often the case at work, you can change your emotional state, which is, you know, I know that there are certain things which, you know, will make it easier for me to do this task. So as a general rule, anything that needs detail, you know, lots of concentration, lots of detail, lots of focus, it's actually better to be in a neutral mood or even slightly negative. Whereas when you need to think big picture, be creative, do those sort of big, you know, creative type of jobs, being in a positive mood is actually really helpful. And even just knowing that, and when you sit down to do something, go, what have I got to do today and what mood is going to be the most productive for me? You know, that's a really, you know, useful skill. Then we look at understanding, which is what we're doing is evaluating emotional scenarios. So going back to that example I gave the manager who said, my best person resigned and I didn't see it coming. You know, understanding emotions would have been looking at it and going, 6 months ago, this person just said they were unhappy with something. If I don't fix it, it's likely their emotions going to escalate. And as people's emotions escalate over time and get more intense and stronger, it could come to the point where this person takes some sort of action against, you know, towards, you know, changing what's going on for them. You know, and likewise, if the person had fixed it straight away, the person doesn't go from being really upset to zero in just like that. It takes time to wind back down. So then understanding that would be, okay, and I need to give this person space to process, and it's going to take them, you know, say it took them 6 months to get really, really angry, it might take them 2 or 3 months before they're not angry anymore about it, you know, that kind of thing. And all of this can be really, really useful at work. And then the final one, the managing emotions, is about how do I effectively manage my emotional state? So it's not about flatlining your emotion and not feeling emotion. It's absolutely not that, because, you know, it's quite okay to be angry, to be sad, to be upset, to be happy, to be whatever it is in the workplace, but it's about how you manage the output of that. You know, it's simply looking at it and going, you know, I'm feeling really upset about this situation, understanding why you feel really upset about it, and then going, what do I want to do that's going to be really constructive? It's the behavior is the choice point, which is, you know, what can I choose? I coached somebody who got sent to me with anger management problems, and he would get really upset about things and start thumping tables and shouting at people. And he had a team of, you know, young girls working for him. It was in an accounts payable. So he was like a, you know, 50-something big burly bloke, and he had all these 17-year-old trainees who were terrified of him. And he said, I can't help getting angry, you know. And when we unpacked it, he got angry whenever he felt disrespected. And so I did a piece of work with him around understanding that respect means different things to different people. And when somebody does something to him that he feels is disrespectful, they probably didn't intend it to be disrespectful. And then managing his emotions so that rather than shouting and thumping tables, he was able to just process it and talk about it, which is, you know, right now I'm upset about this because it feels disrespectful, or it feels like I've been disrespected. And then having a dialogue with that person about what was going on rather than shouting at them. And that's really the choice. That's the emotional management piece, is how do we, you know, how do we deal constructively with emotion? It's not about let's not feel angry. It's like feeling angry might be perfectly valid. It's how do we then deal with the situation in a way that's going to be as constructive as possible.
Right. And I think in the assistant world, when I think of what negative emotion is probably the most prevalent, I think of maybe annoyance or being put mm-hmm. out, and then it's just this exasperated sigh or, you know, negative sentence, whatever it is about the task. And I often think of it sort of as a mindset thing, but I think really at its core, that initial reaction is managing that emotion.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. We could be annoyed, we can be stressed, we can be overwhelmed, and when we are those things, yeah. You know, often, but it's making the choice to manage that emotion. And as you mentioned in one of the previous points, then shifting that, changing that emotion. And yeah. I mean, that takes a lot of self-awareness, self-control, and clearly a very high level of emotional intelligence to be able to do that and sort of work all of those points in together when all you want to do, your instinct is to get mad, get upset, be angry, annoyed, whatever that is. So you have some great tips in there that are just so applicable in our world that I really hope listeners will find you on Facebook and learn more and take the free course, because like I said, I just think this is such an important topic for them. to learn about.
One of the things that we do, and I guess a really simple emotional management technique, is to take a step away from it, kind of almost distance yourself a little bit, because this is about the words that we use. When we get angry, we say, I am angry, and you are not angry, you're a person who happens to be angry. So we absorb, we bring it in and we kind of make it big, we make it feel big, we stew on it, we make it, you know, it's that sort of sense of we feel put upon, and we feel like somebody's asked us to do something when can't they see how much work I already have? And then you start to blame the other person and you stew on it and it becomes bigger and bigger, and I think I'm really angry about this. Whereas being able to, using the words, actually step away from it, which is, isn't it interesting that this isn't annoying me so much? Or isn't this interesting that this is making me angry? It's taking that emotional step away from it. You're not angry. You're a person who is feeling anger at the moment. And, you know, emotions, if we don't hang on to them, if we just let them pass, they take only a couple of minutes. So all you've got to do is distract yourself for 2 minutes, you know, ground yourself, go for a walk, go make a cup of tea, listen to some music. All it takes is about, you know, 90 seconds a couple of minutes to defuse the emotion if you don't grab onto it. But what we tend to do is we tend to grab onto it. It's like you get that feeling of irritation when someone said, can you do this thing for me? And you're like, oh, I've got this huge to-do list. But then we stew on it. We grab that, we pull it in, we make it bigger than it is, rather than going, yes, this is annoying, but if I wait 2 minutes, this feeling's going to go away. And that's something that a lot of people could practice.
Yes. And actually, in my academy, we talk a lot about well-being. And part of your well-being in the workplace is having that ability to step away. Because I know we're all busy. We all have a million things to do. And sometimes it's easier to just sit at your desk from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and never get up and just plow through. But really, I mean, this just adds to the list of the reasons why it's so important to just walk away sometimes, whether it's, just go get a cup of coffee or go for a walk. I mean, it's so beneficial on so many levels, because it's really hard then to come back. And I would really challenge someone to leave their desk with that level of annoyance or anger or overwhelm and come back and try and get in that same level of that feeling. It's extremely difficult to do, because you just mentally had the time to step away.
You've let it go and it's passed on. Yeah, and that's really the key, is that emotions will pass within a couple of minutes if we just let them, rather than hanging on to it. So it's for really busy people, really overwhelmed people, managing stress, and like I said, managing well-being is really, really critical. And part of that can be good emotional management, which is letting go of things that are bothering you. Like you said, get up, go for a walk, get a cup of tea, cup of coffee, go chat to somebody for a few minutes. But the important thing is it's not about distracting yourself. It's about letting go of the emotion. So it's not going to be healthy if the first thing you do is pick up the phone to call your best friend and complain about what's just happened. That's not helping. It's get up and go and do something completely different for a few minutes. And like I said, a couple of minutes is all it's going to take for it to dissipate. It might be a couple of minutes of meditation or some deep breathing, or, it could be anything. But basically it's about removing yourself from that situation, letting the emotion pass on by, and then going back and picking up where you left off.
Yes, absolutely. It makes me think of, I have a good friend who probably does have a very high level of emotional intelligence, because sometimes she'll just look at me and say, what are you perseverating on? She knows that I am stewing on something. Yeah. So that's what I need my reminder to walk away. Now, you mentioned a free course. I want to make sure that we get the title in there, and I'll make sure to put the link in the show notes, but I just want to make sure listeners know how to find that. So what is the title of that free course?
It's actually on my website. It's called Developing Your Emotional Intelligence. And people go to my website and go to training courses and to free courses. They'll find it there. It's the first one in the free courses. And it's basically, I think it's four videos, which basically walks you through those four branches of emotional intelligence and tips on how to actually develop them.
Great, great. So I'll get that link and make sure to put it in the show notes. Well, Roz, thank you so much. This has been such a beneficial conversation. I'm really excited for listeners of this episode to learn more from you and now have awareness of emotional intelligence and have a better understanding of it and be able to apply it in their role and in their workplace. So thank you so much for being on the show.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
One episode is only enough to barely scratch the surface on this topic and the discussion around the power of emotional intelligence in the workplace. You've heard what an amazing resource Roz is, so I encourage you to check out her free course on developing emotional intelligence. I've added a link in the show notes. And also, go find her on Facebook, Roz Cardinal of Shaping Change. As you heard here, she is just a powerhouse and full of knowledge. I know you have many, many options out there and only a finite amount of time, so thank you so much for listening to this episode. Until next time, be brave, be kind, be you. This is Anna McDonald.